5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hey everyone, welcome to Maximum Film, episode 219. Here's your host, the Dirty Dog, outlaw of the Pod West, if you want anyway, and I'm in the booth with my fiends. So let me introduce you to them, because we're outlaws and we got some stuff to say. First up, we have the Christmas outlaw himself, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
If I am tempted to do this entire episode as a grizzled old prospector, but I'm not going to do that because one gimmicky voice is enough for any podcast. What is good for me is a friend of Linoleum Knife sent me a care package of cinnamon candy, which is a thing that I really love and don't ever get my hands on enough. I had forgotten about Jolly Rancher Cinnamon Fire. It lives up to the name, and I like a nice burst of spicy goodness from a candy, and the Jolly Ranchers are really delivering. I have not had one in my mouth for years. I have dental work; most of us do, but what the heck? I'm really enjoying them.
I am not a cinnamon fan, but we used to go to Monster Palooza every year, which is like the creature special effects horror festival. And weirdly, it was cooked into our thing that beforehand we would go to this like small bar in the morning, like near whatever Radisson this thing took place in. And we would always get shots of this cinnamon liqueur, like
Goldschlagen.
Fireball. That was way classier. This was called like Hot Shot or whatever it was. Flamin' Hot. No. Anyway, now I hope that those candies taste just like that, but maybe less alcohol, presumably.
I'm thinking they're not that jolly.
They're not that jolly.
Yeah, it's really hard to be jolly. Now, I gotta say that I'm real excited. My What's Good is gonna be a convention, so I'll save it for that. But next up, we have the fastest gun in the Midwest. It's Drea Clark. What's good?
Iffy, you are killing me with that accent. I'm extremely excited about it. I really kind of want to just hit you with some Minnesota goodness in response. Young man coming in here with your little voice thinking it's funny, huh? What's good with me is today I stood in line weaving through the produce section of an Albertsons so I could get my booster shot. That's Yay. Right. This girl, 3 shots of Moderna. What's up? Woo woo.
Wow. And you didn't even have to wait till high noon to get that. That's a joy, right?
I made an appointment so I could avoid the whole high noon thing. But maybe I want to think that my Moderna flavor is this elusive spicy cinnamon liqueur that I can't remember. Please don't drink your Moderna if you come across it. Please do not try and prove me right. But yes, that's what's good with me. Standing in an Albertsons amongst my fellow people, masked, near produce.
There's something shots. about that third shot that really kind of, for me anyway, certainly like has me ready to face the world again. I went to a movie this week.
Ooh. Oh, Alonzo!
So, film did you go see?
I went to a Monday matinee of Spencer and really enjoyed it. But and I've forgotten how much I hate all the trailers at AMC theaters. But anyway, neither here nor there. Oh, and I spent $6 on a water too. That was exciting.
Oh, but that's still the real cinema.
Moderna 3. I'm in the world again.
You did it.
Sort of, a little, slowly, one step at a time.
Now we have someone join our posse for this movie. Because we always have a member of the posse for great movies. Some may even argue that this may be the whole reason I'm doing the voice. Maybe live audition on this podcast. Because, of course, we have the writer and director of the film, The Ballad of Lefty Brown, Jared Moshe. What's good with you, partner?
I reckon I'm not going to do a voice. Y'all got the voices much better than I got.
How about Jane Darwell? No one's taken that one yet.
You had us at I Reckon.
I like to, but that's not me doing a voice. I foster in, I just pepper in our reckons into my natural speech. Also, y'all. Y'all is a great pronoun that needs to be used more often.
Oh, 100%.
Non-gendered.
Also good.
Perfect. What's good with me is it was my anniversary last week, and my wife didn't tell me what she got me. Thank you. And all of a sudden, a box of cheese showed up on my front step today from Murray's Cheese Shop. So I've been indulging in a cheese extravaganza all afternoon. Yeah,
don't say cheese explosion.
That's no, cheese yeah, explosion is not the right word. We can edit that one out.
What anniversary year is cheese? Is that seven?
It's eight. It's eight.
Eight's good.
The cheese anniversary.
I think it's technically dairy in general. But
sure. You know, most
but really every anniversary should be the cheese anniversary.
Oh, truly. Yes. Truly. I mean, if it's true love. Yeah. Iffy.
Sheriff Iffy. Sheriffy.
Sheriffy.
Wait, is he a sheriff or an outlaw?
Yeah. I didn't even clearly state I was an outlaw.
He's an outlaw.
We forgot to do zip, zap, zop before the pod, so our improvisation is off. And because what has been cut out to ye listeners, I've been begged to stop doing this voice. So I will say that my what's good was going to ComplexCon this weekend. And that's look, and people are like, did a person leave the room? No, I'm the same person. That's what we call acting.
If he was an outlaw, because he needs to feel wanted.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Thirsty for attention. ComplexCon was fun. It was really great. Bought a whole bunch of stuff that I probably don't need. But Rihanna showed up, but I had to go because I'm a good dad. So I will remind Naomi that I didn't see Rihanna because I went to go be a father. So anytime she has an attitude with me, there's two things I will remind her. One, I didn't see Rihanna because I went to be a mother. And two, when she was born, I took down a profile picture on Facebook of me and Emma Stone for her. So it's adding up.
You give.
the back sass just needs to be non-existent is what I'm saying.
Did I see you do some cosplay at this event?
Oh, not at this one, because this is ComplexCon is a convention for streetwear and stuff. So technically I was doing cosplay by dressing like a fashion fuckboy. But I did have fun this Halloween. If you're talking about my no face, that was done by my wonderful girlfriend Molly. She did a paper mache to make the no face mask. Nice. And someone replied to it when I tweeted it to, they said, I love complicated couples costume where like the girlfriend is dressed really nice and the boyfriend is just her prop. And I was like, yeah, that's definitely what it felt like. I had one piece, which was the mask, and she had like this, she went and got the sweater and the shoes. And I was like, yeah, all right, cool.
Yes, but her not next to you, no one's going to get that
yeah, costume. Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it's essential.
Well, here it is. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Do we have a show? I'm super excited about this movie. Today, we're discussing the new Western from director James Samuel, a.k.a. The Bullets, The Harder They Fall. Plus, we'll hear from the Christmas Zaddy in the Christmas Zaddy Christmas Movie Minute, because tis the season, y'all. And our friend Jordan Cruciola is going to drop in for some exciting news. And of course, we still got some staff picks. But first, it's time for our news segment, Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a news segment and answer the question, Is This Important? Do I Care? And I kick this off with probably the most important piece of cinema media that I will discuss in the history of, I'd say, movie podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Vin Diesel.
Sure.
Just already from the first name I say, Vin Diesel begs The Rock to return to the Fast family. In the ongoing feud between The Rock and Vin Diesel, it appears that one side has extended an olive branch to the other. Vin Diesel posted on Instagram this week with a picture of him and The Rock. In the caption, he pleaded with The Rock for him to return to the Fast and Furious franchise. The post begins with, "My little brother Dwayne, the time has come. The world awaits the finale of Fast 10. As you know, my children refer to you as Uncle Dwayne in this house. There is not a holiday that goes by that they and you
don't send well wishes. He then goes on to say that the character of Hobbs can't be played by no one else and that he hopes The Rock will rise to the occasion to fulfill his destiny. Might I add, this post was so powerful that Kanye West decided to extend an olive branch to Drake. And I can only assume that from this titan extending an olive branch to The Rock, that another titan of music extended an olive branch to Drake. Is this important? Do you care?
My thing with it is this isn't actually an olive branch. This is more just goading. He doesn't ever apologize from saying just fuckery about how he drew out The Rock's performance in his own bad behavior and all the nonsense. He's really just like kind of negging him. It's a whole lot of makeup artist stuff.
Andrea, have you considered this? Have you considered this? Men don't apologize.
I consider that a lot.
But do you think that like Vin Diesel's really hanging out during like Thanksgiving and they're talking about like Uncle Dwayne? Man, wouldn't it be great if Uncle Dwayne were here to come hang out? We should really, you know, let's.
Are they having a cookout in the yard by chance? Because I think I've seen that movie.
No, they're definitely not having a cookout in the yard.
I told Naomi I was going to hop on the pod with Uncle Jared, Uncle Alonzo, Drea, Auntie Drea, and Auntie cousin Drea. Casey.
I mean, just top to bottom, starting this with my little brother.
Yeah.
Off the apple box you have to stand on to even be in the eye line of The Rock. Are you effing kidding me? And then he goes from there and like he pulls his kids in to guilt him. Amazing touch. I love the phrase in my house. And I was like, what I hear is outside of the house, no one's ever once called you Uncle Dwayne. Like ever. It's the whole thing is this beautiful, like, oh, it's such nonsense. It's the most unapology. Oh, my
If all God. You had in your future was XXX and Riddick sequels, you know, I think you would really be working hard to try and make this last Fast and Furious movie something, you know, really unique and memorable. But this is, there's more than a whiff of desperation. I think we've moved straight into stench at this point.
Yeah. This is so ridiculous and so on point. And, you know, to be full insider baseball, it really feels like they did a like official offer and The Rock's people were like, nah, we good. And so he's like, oh, don't worry, y'all. I'm gonna handle this. Let me hop. I will apologize to him publicly. And that's what's gonna do it. Hey, little brother. Like in his head, he did apologize. Like if you were to ask him,
oh yeah,
he was like, oh, I made
myself vulnerable.
This is the most contrite he's ever been, for sure.
I'm not sure I need Hobbs back in the last Fast and the Furious movie. Is that wrong?
Yes, Jared. As a member of the Fast family, everyone has a seat at the table. Even the ghost, you know, we'll hear it. He did already
pull a grenade launcher off a helicopter or whatever. Like.
He was great in Fast Five. It was just downhill from there with that character.
If he's not in Fast 10, it might be like 8 minutes shorter. So, you know, there's that. At
least. Let's just go with the family, man. Like if he's ain't part of the family. Why keep him?
I do think if he doesn't do it, Vin Diesel will absolutely cast an unknown and be like, oh, Hobbs had facial reconstruction surgery. This 100%. Is Hobbs now. Hey, y'all. All y'all. It was announced over a year ago that Wonder Woman director Patty Jenkins would be making the newest Star Wars film called Rogue Squadron. But since that announcement, there has been no casting updates or news about production. And according to Hollywood Reporter, Lucasfilm has taken the film off its production calendar, which means it is postponed indefinitely. There is also no clear reason why production hasn't started yet, other than Jenkins' potentially busy schedule working on Wonder Woman 3 and her upcoming Cleopatra film. Is this important? Do you care? I'll also add, too, that this was a big announcement when it came out because it was meant to be the next film after the, you know, the quote unquote conclusion of the Skywalker saga or whatever. And this was going to be the next Star Wars film, which I think, you know, sort of launching them in whatever direction.
Yeah, to me, it's very hard, and it's one of those things where it's like, I'm going to wait till, you know, to one of these Fridays where someone gets a little too sauced up and starts spilling the tea on Twitter, because, I don't know, there's so many things at play with this specifically. One, I think Patty Jenkins has been getting fucked just by weird dude bros, like, you know, like I think she's
figuratively.
I was gonna say, yes, not,
oh my god,
maybe
yes,
an important disclaimer. Yeah.
Please, yes, figuratively, I think that, you know, she's been under a microscope that no one else quite has, dealing with these, you know, two nerd properties, and as but then also, like, Star Wars itself has been going through a lot as far as, like, what it's doing and who knows how they're reacting to how each parts of this franchise is being accepted. I don't know. These movies.
I mean, the Star Wars action seems to be happening on television right now. I don't think it doesn't seem like if people are, like, on tenterhooks about what the next three movies are as much as, like, ooh, we got the anime version of, you know, Clone Wars, and we got, you know, the Boba Fett show coming on Disney Plus, and yada-da-da. And so that, it seems to be, is where the momentum is happening. And I think, you know, yes, it's easy to sort of pick these things apart and be like, what does it mean? But I think very often, like, if you pay attention to deal announcements or even, you know, sort of title announcements, very often, you know, it's like, yeah, they were gonna, and then this, you know, I mean, like, you read any, like, my friend Stephen Ribello wrote this amazing book about the history of Valley of the Dolls, and, like, a number of announcements in the trade press about which actresses had absolutely, definitely been cast in the movie and then, like, weren't, you know.
Yeah.
I remember, like, being at the Advocate in the 2000s. Like, I was on Kimberly Pierce alert. Like, every couple of months, there was an announcement that Kimberly Pierce was going to be making, like, this movie about a Miami club murder, or she was going to be, you know, adapting that Isaac Asimov novel. And then, like, these things didn't happen, you know? And so that's just, I think, kind of par for the course. And Patty Jenkins is up there. She's a bold-faced name making bold-faced properties. So she's going to get attached to stuff that's going to wind up not being a thing.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. If you ever want to see a bunch of projects you thought were going to go that just fizzle out, just look at my email inbox. There's a lot of them in there. A lot of money spent in my head that just disappears.
Well, also, like, Star Wars properties. It felt like a couple years ago, it was like every day there was a different Star Wars announcement.
True.
Like the, you know, the Davids from Game of Thrones, Rian Johnson. Pat, there's so many. We're going to have this trilogy and that trilogy and this, that, and then. And everyone's like, wait, these all suck. And no one wants to see any of them.
They still have some cooking. Taika Waititi has a Star Wars property going.
Taika Waititi has like 10 trillion
oh
things.
Oh my God.
Right?
Yeah.
Except for he makes all of them so far. Like, I've not yet seen something that fell apart that he was attached to. Like, I genuinely, when he, like, Guardians or Thor, Ragnarok, I was like, oh, no, that's not going to happen. Are they going to do it? They're going to do it. They did it. Yeah, no. But they, like, to Alonzo's point as well, the idea of once The Mandalorian hit like it did, and the bigger news has been out of their episodics and where those will go next, and that's taken over. And as so much of Star Wars is generating, like, young viewers who want to buy merchandise, episodics, not a bad way to do it, so...
I thought it was about generating angry people who want to attack you on Twitter.
That's just a bonus.
Yes, that's the gravy. Because nobody hates Star Wars like a Star Wars fan.
Truth.
So true.
Oh, moving on. The Foo Fighters, okay, are making a horror comedy called Studio 666 with Open Road. According to the synopsis, in Studio 666, the legendary rock band Foo Fighters move into an Encino mansion steeped in grisly rock and roll history to record their much-anticipated 10th album. Once in the house, Dave Grohl finds himself grappling with supernatural forces that threaten both the completion of the album and the lives of the band. According to Dave Grohl, Studio 666, quote, will fuck you up, unquote. Is this important? Do you care?
I'm interested in this for two main reasons. The first reason, everyone please pause this and go watch the Foo Fighters music video Forever Long, which was directed by Michel Gondry. It is a riff on the Evil Dead and the Foo Fighters. Part of it involves them at like a Halloween party where Dave Grohl is dressed up like Sid Vicious. And then Taylor Hawkins, the drummer, is dressed up like Nancy Spungen. There's a lot going on in this music video. It has such horror love, and it's so ridiculous and fun. And if they got a smidgen of that into this movie, I'd be psyched. But I will say this so much reminds me of when Tenacious D announced that they were going to do Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny, the Liam Lynch film. And then you saw the movie, and you were like, oh, because it had the same meta, like they played Tenacious D in it and it involved them recording a thing. And I feel like, ooh, that's a tricky needle to thread.
Yeah, well, it's a sketch, but is it a movie?
Yeah, there was two ways I can go about this. I could do the disingenuous, be mean to the Foo Fighters way, like I don't be deep in the Everlong, three drinks deep at the bar, and I'm singing along. Or the way—
are you saying their 10th album is not much anticipated?
That is exactly what I was going to say. But I will say, what happened to those days where rock bands kept forcing themselves into movies? Like, I felt like that was a very 90s thing. There was all these rock bands who were like, let's do a movie, but we're in it. And we're like this. So I welcome this. And I think, yeah, Dre, you have the right. If they just lean into it and just have goofy fun, I think it'll be a good time. But if they're like, no, we're going to tap Ari Aster and get this going for us. I don't think it's
these guys are hot dads, and they know that's their thing. We're hot dads. We've been hot musicians our whole life. We're kind of dorky. And now we have money.
Sorry, I want them to run through the halls of this Encino mansion like they were the Scooby Gang, you know, and like literally pass in front of the same painting, door, and vase of flowers over and over again while being, you know, like, while running to one of their own songs, you know.
I trust Dave Grohl. I don't know what this is going to be, but I trust Dave Grohl.
He does have good artistic impulses.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think he'd lead you astray.
The things he's collaborated on. He's also someone that, honestly, if Dave Grohl had decided to give acting a whirl like 20 years ago, he would have been a huge star. He's handsome, so charismatic. I don't think it would be much to coax a good performance out of him. So the fact that he's been like, no, I just like to do what I do. I'm going to wait till 2021, and then me and the band are going to make this nutso horror comedy. Like, good. Do that, hot dad. Do it.
I mean, yeah. I think I have a feeling it can go one way and be, you know, not, or it can be the best of the cinema's offerings.
I can't believe I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I
have managed to create a space for myself in the world where I have literally no idea what Dave Grohl's been up to since Nirvana. So this will be a revelation to me in any direction.
He's been befriending and helping amazingly talented 11-year-old female drummers and letting them on stage. And
oh, yes. That was so dope of him.
Oh,
yeah,
I did see him on that episode of The Muppets where he did the drums with the animal.
Yes.
Yes.
And that's the other thing he did. Those two things. Yeah.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, while we look up the videos we just mentioned, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking about The Harder They Fall.
Oh, God.
Hi, it's me, Dave Hill, from before. Here to tell you about my brand new show on Maximum Fun, the Dave Hill Good Time Hour, which combines my old Maximum Fun show, Dave Hill's Podcasting Incident, with my old radio show, The Goddamn Dave Hill Show, into one new futuristic program from the future. If you like delightful conversation with incredible guests, technical difficulties, and actual phone calls from real-life listeners, you've just hit a street called easy. I'm also joined by my incredible co-host, the boy criminal Chris Gersbeck. Say hi, Chris.
Hey, Dave. It's really great.
That's enough, Chris. And New Jersey chicken rancher Dez. Say hi, Dez.
Hey, Dave.
The Dave Hill Good Time Hour. Brand new episodes every Friday on Maximum Fun.
Plus, the show's not even an hour. It's 90 minutes.
Take that, stupid rules.
We nailed it.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Jared Moshe.
Alonzo Duralde.
And today we're talking about The Harder They Fall. Now, Alonzo, I gotta ask you a quick question.
Would you mind providing us with a brief synopsis? You may or may not use a cowboy voice if you so choose.
The thing is, you sound less and less like an outlaw and more like one of the like panhandlers that the outlaws pass on their way. Who are like, I think he went that way, into the hills.
Like the Civil War vet with like no legs.
I would maybe do it as Clint Eastwood's Man with No Name, but that's like four words. So, you know. Okay. So here's the deal. Jonathan Majors stars as Nat Love, who is an outlaw who has spent his entire life getting revenge on the posse of bad dudes who murdered his parents in front of him. And he thinks that he's got them all. But now news is coming out that the worst of the gang... Rufus Buck. Thank you. That's a good name. Rufus Buck is getting out of prison. So now he's got to go kill him too. And so that involves getting his gang back together, including Shotgun Mary, played by Zazie Beetz, his ex.
Stagecoach Mary.
Yeah.
I'm just getting all the names wrong today. Stagecoach Mary, his ex, with whom he has incredible sexual chemistry. But it turns out that Rufus and his gang, which includes Regina King and Lakeith Stanfield, are taking over an entire town. So it's getting really complicated. And this is basically a movie for people who have seen a whole bunch of Westerns and recognize a whole bunch of Westerns and are very excited to see those things in a new Western with a really super sexy, almost entirely black cast, because that's what the West actually looked like.
Mm.
Ooh,
good job, like Alonzo.
I understand what happened now.
So, it all makes sense.
To kick this thing off, I guess I would ask, how well versed are we in the Western game? Save for Alonzo, and I guess Jared too. Oh, since
I'm no Drea, you know.
So Drea, you're a huge Western stan.
I am. I am, and I have been for a long time. And then I spent a lot of quarantine. I watched probably over 100 Westerns for in the thick of the pandemic and my shut-in state, largely for a podcast that Jared also did a different iteration of it. I did the final section of the Screen Drafts Western podcast, but also because once you get started, it's real easy to deep dive into the... It is for me anyway. So yes, a love and a long... And unexpected. No one ever talks to me about Westerns because, you know, I love.
I'll talk
like
to you
me.
About Westerns.
Thank well, you, Jared. I'll really talk
to anyone about Westerns.
That's what I was going to say. But I fell.
If you wore more fringe, Drea.
I fell victim. fell victim to it too. I didn't know you were a huge Western head until now. But I think you part mentioned of, it on the pod before.
I have, and part of it is, and it's one of the reasons a film like The Harder They Fall is a really exciting entrance to this is. Westerns are a great place to look at kind of cultural trends. And if you want to explore the concept of forced masculinity in American men, get into Westerns. Like John Wayne ruined an entire generation of men in terms of personal expectations, the lack of emotional connection or vulnerability, and then how they evolve and how current Westerns subvert that or tweak that or show actual what real humans were maybe like. Even in Broadway's The Harder They Fall is really, it's interesting because it keeps being brought up as, and it is fascinating. And it stands out when you're watching it because there's such a theatrical feel to it for something that was made for Netflix. It's so vibrant and so colorful, but it also feels, as much as it's grounded in like great connections and a lot of the character motivations are sincere and emotional and, you know, realistic for humans, there's still this very like, oh, it's kind of operatic or like Shakespeare, you know, it's sort of bigger than life. And I think that's a fun approach for it, even more than just being excited by the all black cast. But you do get this thing with the all black cast of, oh my God, like the kid who played, the young assassin who, Jim Beckworth, who wants to have a shootout and be the quickest draw in the West. And he wants to have a shootout with Lakeith Stanfield's character.
Cherokee Bill.
Yeah, he is so charming, so like, and there were at least five roles in this that I'm like, Dion Cole would have never got to play a character like this in a white Western. Like, there's people getting to unlock things in themselves. And I find that very fun, above and beyond being a Western and what that means. But, like, being, you know, actors and directors and people just getting to play in a space that they haven't always. It's not that there's not any, and Jared can definitely speak to a longer sort of running of Black casts in Westerns, but it was very magnetic in this.
Yeah, I this, like, truly watching this, all I could think of is, like, this seemed like it was so fun to act in. Somebody cast me in a Western ASAP, please. Like, it just, like, all this, there's multiple things that I would think on as, so just, I'm as for my Western, like, chops, I've seen a few, I'm a big fan of it, but, like, I think my biggest, like, entry into Western are the Red Dead Redemption games, because they lean so heavily into wanting to be Western movies, like, so much so that the second one can be such a slog because it leans so heavily on its cinematic elements that you're like, no, I'm raising a child. I need this game to get to the shooting. I can't sit here and sit in the coach and let you talk. I got to shoot stuff. She's waking up. But yeah, that's kind of what I was bouncing between, was this, like, it was just three thoughts that bounced between my house. One, I would love to see, like, some more Black Westerns. I'd love if this was a continuous series. I'd love to see other people's takes on it. Two, I want to play Red Dead Redemption 2. And three, I want to go back and watch some of the older Westerns to really see what this is kind of, like, tapping into.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, Westerns and horror movies for me are sort of, if I have a broccoli in the film world, it's those. And then, like, I know they're important. I know that people love them. I know they're essential in the overall history of cinema. And there are quite a few of them that I like of both those genres, but they're never my go-to. I'm not, like, Westerns are a thing that I have learned over the years, and I've seen, you know, a handful of the essential ones. I still have a lot of, you know, Bud Bedecker and, you know, things to catch up on. But I know enough that when I watch a movie like this, I can sort of pick out the John Ford moments from the Sergio Leone moments, you know, and there's such a delight in the pieces of the genre and the sort of expectations we have and what we're going to see and how things are going to be presented, that I just found this really kinetic. Like, I think so often, you know, I know the easy comparison is Tarantino, as far as somebody who sort of, like, you know, loves old genres and retools them. But this really kind of felt like it was a genuine sort of joy in this stuff, even when it's, like, horrifyingly violent or really suspenseful. There's a certain just kind of revelry in getting to do this and getting to do it for the actors, certainly. And I think, you know, there's moments where, like, the art direction team really gets to shine and, you know, have these really outrageous moments. And so, yeah, while I'm not a giant Western fan, I thoroughly enjoyed watching this movie. And I love the idea that, you know, because you always hear, you know, almost like this crazy percentage of cowboys were Black. You just never saw that in, like, almost every Western you ever saw in your life. So to see a movie like this, where they're actually playing around with real people, even though these are entirely fictional circumstances, it feels like the beginning of the pendulum going in a way that actually gives us Westerns that looked like what the West looked like.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, but, like, the West was a lot more even multicultural than this. I mean, this was very, like, you know, where's the Chinese people? Where's the Chinese presence? Yeah. Where's the
indigenous?
Indigenous, which I know, but not that, I mean, I'm not faulting this movie for that. I mean, I think it's really cool that they decided to make literally a Black Western and not do it in a way that it was explicitly about race in any way. I mean, I love that moment where the train driver hops off and is about to say the N-word, and Trudy shoots him in the face and is like, we're not going to say that word in this movie. And she's speaking to the audience because they're not speaking, you know, or, like, the idea that they're all talking about the white town. And then it turns out it's like the town is literally painted white.
Whitewashed.
Yeah. Everything. And it's like, oh yeah, it is the white town. Like, the way it just handled, like, I'm going to make a movie that I'm going to make a Western. I'm going to put a lot of Black faces in it and not make it about race, when so many Westerns that used to like that felt like they had to have a black were about race. Like that was all explicitly about race.
I mean, it's sprinkled in there. There's this sort of notion of like, even though you have these two factions of black outlaws against each other, they're all sort of subject to the oppression of the U.S. government.
Yeah.
You know, and so they it's a flavor, but it's not the overwhelming, you know, reason for being for this movie.
Yeah, but the oppression of the U.S. government is like a thing in Westerns, though, as much as
true.
Like, that's like a theme in the genre.
I think the best way to say this is something that I've actually had a conversation about just in general about like black cinema. And, you know, I have a buddy who's like wants to do like a like black like detective type beat. And what we were talking about is the difference you can tell when you have, and this goes for all, I feel like, marginalized groups, but when you have like a white man writing the story versus like a black person writing the story, when you're a white person, the blackness is interesting to you because that's what's foreign to you. So you make this story and you surround it. But like me, I'm black. Everything is going to be the same. Like to me, being black isn't a big deal. It's part of my life. So everything is going to be the same, even though I'm going to experience life differently. Black is just going to be more matter of fact. It's just part of it. So when you have this movie, and I think that's kind of what we've all been circling around, they are black. You immediately tell that they are black when they walk into the white town with the way she laughs in her face. Like, racism is in the movie. Oppression for black people is in the movie, but it isn't the focus because they still have to move about the world. They're still in it. And that's what makes it beautiful is it's not this like, oh, black cowboy in the West. It's cowboys in the West who happen to be black. So they're exploring this world as black people. They're dealing with things black people would deal with, but that's not the main point. It's not the main drama of the film. And that's what I think really made me excited. Like the fact that, like, you know, they're getting ready to rob this bank and you get kind of nervous. And then like, I just immediately flipped sides the moment the lady opened her mouth. I was like, oh no, fuck this lady. Like, I totally heard what she's saying. And I like it that way too. Because I think there, and this becomes more important when we talk it on a social level, the idea of racism starts and begins at the N-word. Like, that's what we think racism is. We don't take this person seeing this black woman asking for a withdrawal, laughing in her face and telling her to go to a black town. We don't see that as racism, as oppression, but that is racism that most black people deal with daily, is this idea, this perception, and how we have to deal with it. But instead, the joke's on her. It's flipped. She has a gun in her face now. And even in this outlaw moment, you have black people who can watch this and feel powerful. And that's what black people are saying when they're saying we're tired of the slave flicks. We're not saying you can't talk about race in movies. It's just that it shouldn't be the subject of the movie. It can be a part of it because we deal with that shit day to day. So when you have it in a movie, it shouldn't be the main thing because we don't think about it. We'd go crazy. This country, we'd burn this country to the ground if race was on the forefront of our minds. No, I gotta make dick jokes. I gotta fucking watch anime. I gotta fucking watch,
you gotta
play Red Dead Redemption.
Your outlaw voice.
Yeah, I gotta perfect my outlaw voice. So like, that's the beauty of this movie. But I did have a very specific question for my Western heads in here that kind of tap before we fully dive into this movie. This is, I was looking at his resume. This is actually his second Western, because he did a short, and it looks, and I wondered if either of y'all saw that short and how it compares to this.
First off, I can't believe we've made it this long that this movie was directed by Seal's brother. And
wait,
that is
what?
One of my favorite
what?
Details.
I did not know that about
this
either.
This motion picture is directed by Heidi Klum's ex-brother-in-law. And that needs to be
why wasn't that on the
up.
Poster?
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe
when you look at a picture of him, this is straight up Seal's brother. Like, you can't deny it. That's his brother.
I would not joke about that. Yeah. I want a kiss on a rose or whatever.
Yeah, he looks like
on the gray.
Yes, thank you.
Baby!
Yes. I did not see his original short. I don't know if anyone else.
I did not either.
I did not, and no one else did either. But I will say, and Jared will probably back me up here, the amount of times that I wanted to pause, I was budgeting this thing the entire time. I'm like, ooh, money, 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 money. Like,
so much money. This is what $90 million in a Western.
Much money. Like, I... People don't always understand what money on the screen looks like or how much things cost, but the builds in this,
the train,
just the shots, the coverage they were getting, the fight scenes, the color, just the whole thing. The needle drops, the soundtrack in this is bananas because he's initially a musician and it's, you know, executive produced by Jay-Z, so fair enough. But like, the money in this movie is out of control. So whatever he did do with his short hopefully led to this. But I do think the worldview that he was coming across or that came across in this movie probably was evident in his pitch. And he was clearly well connected before this as an established musician and producer. But to me, it's one of those like, oh, first time director doing something a lot spendier than many first-time directors.
And it also helps that he had the DP from The Master and Jojo Rabbit, Mihai Malamari Jr. And, you know, we frequently bring up the topic about, you know, shooting black faces and doing it right. And God knows, everybody in this movie looks great.
Mm-hmm.
But the coverage is amazing as well. The shots he's getting, the time.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, he can get the time to, like, it's very Sergio Leone in, like, he's experimenting with the camera. I remember, I think it's actually when Cherokee Bill is going to have his big shootout with
Jim Beckwith.
And it's like, you literally, like, go up for a shot and the shadows are perfect. And it's like, and then it's like, right there, camera. It's like, the money and the time I'm watching this. And
that's what I'm saying.
I've made Westerns. It's hard to get those because like you're in the middle of nowhere. You have to fight against the elements to get like, and
can you fudge that stuff in post?
Not as well as you'd think.
Because it's so crisp and it is such a stark landscape. They do have so many exteriors and so much. And because of that, it gives you like, that whole constructed town at the end, it has such a different texture to it than if that was all on a soundstage, right? Like you get you feel that grit. And to combine feeling that grit with the fact that there's just like no need for just the huge swaths of fabric that are around all the time. Like,
wait, where was that fight? Because it looked like a stable. And there were horseshoes.
Sure.
But there was fabric.
It was basically the farmer's market of Redwood, but like set designed to an inch of its life. Yeah, there's this amazing... I thought all the fight scenes were also wonderful. Like the choreography, the stunts, all of it. And it's shot well and just so fluid.
That leads me to the next thing of what I think is very good in this movie that I like is, you know, a movie is great when like everyone's cool. Like I thought the villains were cool. I thought the hero, like it never was like, I don't know. Like everyone was cool as hell. The only people who weren't cool in this movie were the white people. So I was on board but it is funny because I like that we're, you know, have some Western pros in here, because anytime I watch a movie like this that is like a genre play, I am like, how much of it is borrowed and how much of it is borrowed in a way that you're like, oh, we've seen this all the time, you know?
Well, I think what he did was really interesting is he clearly was really inspired by A Few Dollars More and for A Few Dollars More the second, like narratively and structurally and the shots and such forth. But I think what he really did is he sort of took that the way like Sergio Leone came in and played with the Western genre with love for it and then added this sort of European flair. You know, he came in and loves the genre. And I was actually really scared when I watched this movie. I was going to hit, this was going to be like another American Outlaws or Texas Rangers, like a bunch of act. But like, I was scared that too slick for its own good and just, you know, anachronistic. But what he did is he took the genre, like, and he brought his own sort of music sensibilities to it and his African-American sensibility, He's British. Black sensibilities to it, and made something new and playful in the way that in this mold of the way a spaghetti Western did. And I thought that was really cool. and really fun, and it made the movie really energetic and enjoyable to watch.
I mean, we were talking around like, you know, someone playing in the Western genre as if we don't have someone digitally sitting with us who've done it twice. So, yeah, what attracts you to the genre? What, like, made you want to cast me in your next one?
Well, I want to cast you in your next one because of that voice, clearly.
Obviously.
I
mean, yeah.
I need the Civil War veteran who's begging for money. And I see it, man. I see it. Yeah, I mean, I'm a New York Jew who loves Westerns. To me, I think the Western speaks to this very interesting sort of place where mythology and history meet. And it's the tropes are such that, like, everyone knows them. Even if you say you don't know Westerns, you know the tropes. Like, you know, they've seeped into everyday, into our everyday lives. And it is this great space and playing field to explore, like, who we think we are versus who we really are. It is like the only true American genre in that way. And I think what's so special about this film is it continues in doing that. It like does it by putting all these black faces in a way that isn't explicitly about race. Cause you know, the first major studio Western to cast an African-American was Sergeant Rutledge. That was John Ford. It was 1960. It cast Woody Strode. He was the title character. He played Sergeant Rutledge. He was not the top billed actor in that movie. He was not the second billed actor in that movie. I don't think he was even the third billed actor in that movie.
You mean the guy who played Sergeant Rutledge in the motion
Sergeant
picture?
Rutledge, Sergeant Rutledge was the fourth billed actor in his own movie. It was the first movie starring an African American, and it had to basically make, it made this movie about, he plays a Buffalo soldier wrongly accused of raping and murdering a white woman. And sort of like there's this courtroom, it's a courtroom drama mixed with like the Western flashbacks. And I think what like it, they always like felt like they had to wrestle with these things explicitly about race. And what he did here is he didn't, he explored the America, like his version of America, you know, and tried to create a picture of it. And I think that is so cool about what you can do with this genre. Everyone knows what they has their preordained thoughts of it, and you can explore it and you can make people rethink both what they think of America, but what they think about themselves and the world a little bit. Did that make sense?
That was poetic. Yes.
But yeah, no, he is the fourth build. Sergeant Rutledge is actually a really interesting movie to watch because it's this entire movie that's a courtroom drama about raping a white woman. And if you ask Woody Strode, he talks about he got to do the yeehaw. I think his term is he gets to do the yeehaw ride across the river and save the day. And until that time, that was always John Wayne. And now he got to do it. And that's what was special to him about that movie.
Wow.
Nice.
Cool.
Well, dang.
Vote.
I think it's time to vote on our what we thought of this movie. Now, you know, the way we vote here, Jared, is, you know, screen it is the highest vote. Stream it. Mid-level, skip it, exactly what it sounds like. So, you know, as our guest, why don't you kick things off?
Oh, you should definitely, wait, stream it is the top level?
Scream it
is the top level. I mean, this movie, look, is fun. It is a blast. It is a great Western. It is scrumptious to look at. The colors are amazing. It gets a little messy in the middle. I'm not going to lie, but like it's a totally enjoyable ride and it is a great Western. It is a great Western for people who might not be the biggest fans of Westerns as well.
That's a good point.
Yeah. All right. Alonzo, what do you think?
Yeah, for sure. Screen it. And I would say literally, like if I have the chance to see this in a theater on a big screen, I would love to because it is gorgeous to behold. I mean, yeah, it again, not perfect. It could lose maybe 15 minutes somewhere in there, but there is so much to just delectate in this movie. I really want more. I'm thrilled that we have Regina King director, but I don't want to lose Regina King actress. So I love that. I could see a whole other movie about Danielle Deadwyler's gender nonconformist gunfighter Cuffy. I was thrilled by this movie in a way that I did not expect to be because I'm not a Westerns guy. So I am that person that Jared says, even if you're not into Westerns, you may find yourself digging this movie.
I am also a screen it for all the reasons they said. I would love to see this on a big screen and then redo the budget tally in my head because money, 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 money. But it's also, I think a lot of people find Westerns daunting, or maybe you've only ever seen them because like you turned on TBS on a Sunday and it was midway through one and you're like, who are these? But this is like an ensemble. You have several ensembles and every single character in this like has spice to them. Like there's, maybe I have still some Dune in me, but you know what I mean? There's like spark and interest and they each have a different flavor to them. And maybe I'm hungry. Why do I keep talking like this? Anyway, I'm a screen it. I think it was a great ride.
Yeah, no, I am a bonus. Screen it and play it. Watch it on the screen. Drive home. Play Red Dead Redemption online. You can be your own black cowboy. You shoot racist. It's great. I truly enjoyed it. Yeah, it was very beautiful. Soundtrack was on point. Especially, like, I just love the... They just bounced to like something you'd expect in a Western to like some more like different tunes that still fit.
There's musical sequences in this.
Yes.
Like there's a heist on a train. There's a bank heist. There's fight scenes. There's musical sequences. Yeah. Something for the whole family.
Yeah, Jonathan Majors started singing. I was like, yeah, that boy went to film school. He was in performing arts. He had to let people know, trying to sign up for that musical.
I do want to warn viewers, there is a scene where you see Jonathan Majors without his shirt on, and you will have the most conflicting drool and full body lust, but also shame because he's in like a compromised position. It's a very emotionally confusing reaction, and I just want people to be prepared for that.
But their cinema history is filled with guys who look great with their shirts off, but you only see it when they're being tortured.
Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah, no. Speaking of torture, yeah, I want Zazie Beetz and Regina King to take turns beating the shit out of me. That's my final review. But we'll be right back after a short break.
Are you feeling elevated levels of anxiety? Do you quake uncontrollably, even thinking about watching cable news? Do you have disturbing nightmares, only to realize it's 2 in the afternoon and you're up? If you've experienced one or more of these symptoms, you may have FNO, news overload. Fortunately, there's treatment. Hi, I'm Dave Holmes, host of Troubled Waters. Troubled Waters helps fight FNO. That's because Troubled Waters stimulates your joy zone. On Troubled Waters, two comedians will battle one another for pop culture supremacy. So join me, Dave Holmes, for 2 doses of Troubled Waters a month. The cure for your news overload. Available on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Jared Moshe,
Drea Clark.
And it's that time again where Alonzo gets as frosted as a Christmas cookie. It's the Christmas Zaddy Christmas Movie Minute. As we all know, Alonzo gets 1 minute to discuss every Christmas movie that he saw this past week. Alonzo, are you ready?
Okay, yes, let's do it.
All right.
You got this.
Let's get the song cranking.
Okay, so we got the 4 new movies from Hallmark, mostly mediocre: Gingerbread Miracle, Mrs. Miracle Christmas, Christmas Treasure, kind of whatever. Next Stop Christmas, actually pretty cool, funny, works a time travel element in, and it gives us 2 Back to the Future stars, so who can complain about that? Love Hard on Netflix, terrible title, but really charming. Nina Dobrev and Jimmy O Yang make a really charming couple, and it's actually pretty smart, and Harry Shum Jr. gets to play a total bastard older brother. An indie film that just dropped on streaming this week called See You Next Christmas. Wasn't expecting much, it wound up being quite funny and charming. It really took me by surprise. I recommend you check it out. Also funny and charming, even though super cheap, is the Up Channel movie Christmas with the Prince, the Royal Baby, which is like the dime version of the Netflix Christmas Prince movies, but it kind of works. And then finally, Home Sweet Home Alone on Disney Plus. Who knew we needed a reboot of Home Alone, but it actually works. And this time, it's not that the burglars are bad. It's just a wacky misunderstanding. And it's Rob Delaney getting hit and knocked down. Who didn't want to see that?
Nice! Home Sweet Home Alone is the little kid from Jojo Rabbit, right?
His
adorable little friend.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Important question.
Yes.
Does he have an American or an English accent?
No, no, he has the British accent.
Okay.
And what the movie does that's clever is that he's kind of a shit, but also like has a reason to want to defend himself. And Ellie Kemper and Rob Delaney are the couple who are technically, yes, trying to break into his house, but they have a reason for being there. And it's just all a big, crazy misunderstanding.
Oh, hijinks.
There's going to be a lot of injuries before anybody can have the conversation that clears it all up.
That's awesome.
Well, I know. It truly is an adventure how many Christmas movies come out, and also
we're just getting started
to the ever-growing list of new channels I've never heard of presenting said movies.
Alonzo, it's crazy that you know so much about Christmas movies. Have you ever considered writing about that?
Well, ooh, so good question. Funny you should bring that up, Dre.
I know, right?
Yes, it just came to me. I am delighted to announce, for folks who might have missed it, I have co-written a book with the host of the very funny Deck the Hallmark podcast called I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies. It's a guide to their reviews of 116 Hallmark Christmas movies, plus recipes for throwing your own Hallmark viewing party, a little bit of history about Hallmark and Christmas that goes all the way back to the dawn of the medium, intimate and funny first-person stories from the three hosts of the podcast, and even a bingo card with all of your favorite bananas tropes that pop up in all of the Hallmark movies. Yes, there is one that's just person of color tilts their head sympathetically.
Oh, Lord.
Oh.
Yeah, yep. You guys get it.
Yeah.
It's available wherever books are sold.
Yay, Alonzo.
Okay.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And now before we go, here's a short convo we had with our good pal Jordan Cruciola about her new Maximum Fun podcast, Feeling Seen. And here it is now.
Before we finish today, using the cowboy voice that I've been using this whole episode, we have a special call from our good pal, Jordan Cruciola. Hi, Jordan. What are you doing here?
Hello, Max Film Gay. Has Iffy really been a cowboy this entire episode?
Oh, flawless.
Yeah. Only time will tell.
Like, get this man a lozenge.
Has not broken character once.
Yeah, that sounds taxing on the vocal cords.
A veritable
really.
Woody Strode.
I'm still amused at myself for throwing up the quiet coyote on this call. I hope to all the Gen Zers out there listening to Max Film that you still did the quiet coyote in school to get everybody settled down when you were in class.
Speaking of generations, you guys, my aptitude for segues will never improve. I hear there's generations of people clamoring to listen to your new podcast.
I mean, if they have any good sense at all, yeah. They are. The Feeling Seen podcast is coming to the Maximum Fun Network. Me Woo-hoo! And champion producer Casey.
Oh, this Casey.
Have been,
oh,
this Casey, the very same.
Our sweet little elf
have
prince.
Been,
yes. Aw, look at him spreading his wings. What does Feeling Seen mean?
Yes, Feeling Seen is a podcast where each episode we have a new person come on, and that person's more like a co-host than they are a guest. It's conversational. And what I want to do with absolutely everybody is get to a conversation about who is the, you know, the first or formative character that you saw on film, in a movie, that you felt reflected yourself back at you, with very much the clear and present knowledge that many people will not have had that opportunity, that there was not a one-to-one that they were able to sort of like graft themselves onto. And it has to be kind of composite operation because there's not like a sufficient array of intersectionality or diversity in TV. Like, it's getting there, but that's the only thing we started like really doing in the past like 15 minutes. So like I've said in the trailer, we will laugh, perhaps we will cry. I welcome everybody's full spectrum of emotions. And I just want to talk to everybody about this.
And who are these people?
Oh,
who are these people? Yeah, you will hear Emily Vanderwerf kick it off with me, but coming up, Coming up in the pipeline, we have Iffy Waddy Way.
What?
Yeah.
What? Wait, oh, American yeah, Cowboy yeah. Iffy Waddy
Way? Yeah, yeah, so, you know, as no. deep as deep as, you know, this show may sound, remember that.
The harder they
I'm
fall.
I'm on it, and it's in its go. And we talk about, you know, we talk, my movie, I'll let you know right now, is going to be God. Dope, you know, directed by none other than Rick Famuyiwa, who is also a Nigerian American from LA. On Google, it says he's 6'4". He need to put down the camera and pick up the rock. But, you know, that's another story for another day over here on
and
the West.
I'm so glad you wanted to talk about Dope, because that is really one of my favorite movies of like the past 10 years. And it was like a sensation out of Sundance. And then it kind of like faded in the consciousness when it was actually released. And that was completely unjust, because that movie is outstanding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought if he was going to pick Rockwell's Somebody's Watching Me video.
Oh, yeah, that's yep. It was either that, you know. It's
a bit of a toss-up there.
Right? Yeah, there was so much to choose from, you know. I was like, do I go with something like this? Do I go with, like, a big old classic? Like, I tapped into that. But I could have, I could have gone with, like, something like Camille or Dangerous, you know, the Bette yes. Davis vehicle.
You just said Bette Davis, which is how we know how truly much you saw yourself.
Say so somebody opened TCM.com and it's just going
yeah.
with it.
Yeah.
Oh, Young and Davis. Innocent. Sabotage. Juggernaut. The Boris Karloff vehicle.
Oh my gosh. Jordan,
he saw himself in a young lawn chair, really. The twist like of that. The hour.
Well, Junior. I can't wait to get my ear holes on it.
For
Thank
sure.
you. I appreciate
I
that.
I mean, I'm generally more in the like treacly and sad vein, but I yeah. guess your intelligent and more esoteric approach could work as well.
Well, and you know, the name is, it's very sentimental sounding. It's very earnest. Yeah. And I want to just be clear that like, we are not under any illusions at feeling seen that there is an easy answer to this question for everybody. And it's not like a fucking Hands Across America thing.
Yeah.
We're like, and then we all saw ourselves and it was so great. Like, no, the conversation itself is meant to get at the celebration of cinema, the deficiencies of cinema, and sort of where audiences fill that gap and do the wonderful work of letting our imaginations build what we don't have. I know as a queer woman, I identify as a panhermetic gray asexual person, it's been a long road to find equals for what I consider to be my life and experience in this world, which is why it's a conversation I'm excited to have with as many people who will have it with me, because like I know that headcanoning work and I want to hear what other people have to say about it too.
Me too. And I gotta say, I know this is good because, you know, Jesse had to come to me because I told him, I was like, I don't want any more movie podcasts on this network, any more group family brother based podcasts on this network. And he's like, if you gotta hear me out. This is a take on movies you're gonna love. And he was right.
Iffy, you're gonna love this as much as you've loved Bette Davis and every single thing she's done.
There's a whole song that taught me to pronounce her name correctly, and yes, still messed it up.
Two if you count Vogue.
That's true.
We love you. Bette Davis, we love you. Thank you guys very much for allowing me to bomb your episode today to do a little bit of the promotion here. When this comes out, the first episode of Feeling Seen will be available to you. So I expect that you will be showing up for it. You know, do all the good things. You subscribe. You tell your friends about it. You tell your mom about it.
Five-star reviews.
You tell people in line about it at Whole Foods about this thing you heard. Everybody's got too many podcasts, but only one on the Maximum Fun Network has me. And that's a great appeal. So it comes out every Thursday. Be there. First episode, Emily Vanderwerf talking about Midsommar. Second episode is Iffy Waddy Way here, Cowboy Iffy, talking about Dope. And then episode 3 is Susan Orlean, the New Yorker journalist, talking about Adaptation, which, yes, she is a character in, but the conversation is not necessarily as one-to-one as you might expect from something along the lines of a biopic, and gets a little zanier, which was a lot of fun. So turn out for those 3. There are more to come after that, of course, and I look forward to holding you all accountable by asking you what you thought. So check it out.
Bye,
bye, Jordan. I can't wait to feel seen.
Safe travels.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Alonzo, why don't you start?
Well, since we're talking about Westerns that kind of play around with the idea of the Western, one of my favorites of recent years is a film called Slow West, with Michael Fassbender and Cody Smith McPhee. Cody Smith McPhee actually in another Western this year, Jane Campion's Power of the Dog, and people are talking awardsy about him. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear he's really great in it. But Slow West is it's a movie about an American West where no one is American. They're either they're Europeans or, you know, they are. Well, I shouldn't say that no one's American. No one is a standard waspy white American. It's a spice melange, if you will, of all kinds of different folks. And it very much comments upon what the genre, not only just how it works, but what it says about the idea of America and the potential that the American West seemed to hold for a nation that was still sort of figuring out what it was going to be and how it was going to do it. It is currently streaming on Canopy and Hoopla, and I like this one a lot. Slow West.
Slow West is so good. And if you want to see a movie that just like the whole, by the end of it, you're like, oh, this is actually just such a sharp critique of every nice guy who's like, oh, I don't know why she doesn't like me. I'm such a nice guy. But in like, you know, in the guise of a Western. Oh, it's so good.
It's one of the few movies I've ever seen where someone literally gets salt dumped in their wound.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Solid, solid. What you got for Andrea?
I'll go. So I actually have a Western as well. And it is one that I revisited in my pandemic haze and kept thinking of it and watching this. And that is The Quick and the Dead, Sam Raimi's film. It stars Sharon Stone as the like gunslinger that comes to town for this the shootout competition with like a very young Leonardo DiCaprio and Keith David, and Gene Hackman plays like the evil sheriff, and it's Russell Crowe, like his one of his first sort of, ooh, look at me, I'm a macho but sensitive, and When I rewatched it, because I was truly, some of the ones I revisited, I was like, oh, Tombstone. But when I rewatched The Quick and the Dead, I was like, this movie slaps. And it's fun and beautiful and bops along. And if you watch The Harder They Fall, which I hope you do, and you're like, ooh, I'd like, is there something else to, I want to keep this going. The Quick and the Dead. There you go.
Ooh,
good one.
Also, Woody Strode's, I believe, last performance, and the movie is dedicated to him.
Oh, that's nice. Wonderful.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
All right, Jared, do you have a pick for us?
I do, and believe it or not, it's a Western.
What? Yes.
What? Three Westerns? I'm going to go with another Western from the sort of very few Black Westerns, and this is a movie called Buck and the Preacher.
Ah.
From 1970. It is Sidney Poitier starring in his directorial debut. He plays Buck. The preacher is played by Harry Belafonte in this sort of wild out there, incredible performance. And basically the story is Buck is a wagon master who helps bring African-Americans out of Louisiana. This is after the Civil War, so where they're working on plantations. Free men west so they can build land and start their own life. But the plantation owners in Louisiana don't like this. They want their labor. And so they send raiders out to try to stop these wagon trains and eventually try to kill Buck. And not only is it a really interesting experience, a portrait of an African-American experience in the Old West, it does some really wonderful things in the relationships between the indigenous peoples and the African-Americans and the whites. And it's not exactly everything you expect in those relationships. Highly recommended. I am not sure where it is streaming right now. I saw it on the Criterion Channel when they were doing their fantastic Black Western series a couple months ago.
Ooh.
Nice.
Yeah, phenomenal pick. And you know, I obviously was going to keep the Western trend going originally. Was going to go with a banger like Shanghai Noon, decided against it. But mine was just going to be what I've kind of liked and kind of really been trying to think of ways that it could be nailed more often is just the idea of like the modern Western. And then of course I have to go with my favorite, which is Hell or High Water. I was like, yep, this is it, y'all. This is what I felt like it would be. I'd like to see flavors of that too. I mean, which I'm sure we'll get. That's I feel like people like making those.
Dads always need something to watch.
Oh man, dads love that. Yeah. There's two things dads love: modern Westerns and Tom Clancy. they can't get enough.
I gotta say, making Westerns is all the crew who makes all these indie films. They all come to me and they're like, I'm finally making a movie my dad wants to see.
Exactly.
And that's what you love to hear, right? Like,
totally. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's my movie ticket.
That's Walmart money right there.
Oh my gosh, Jared, thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything that you'd like to plug before we get up out of here?
Wait, can I plug for Jared?
Oh yeah,
I know
of course.
He's a director and there's a thing. Dead Man's Burden is actually how we first met, because we played that at the LA Film Festival. Ooh. When I was programming there. And The Ballad of Lefty Brown, which is currently on Netflix. It's on, I think, Canopy and Hoopla, a.k.a. the Alonzo streaming sites. Check it out. It's one of my favorite things Bill Pullman's ever done. I think Jared has a really nice eye and sensibility for these things. And directors need hype people because they're artists. So I will do that. And now I did it.
And Dead Thank Man's you, Burden is on Tubi.
Oh, there you go. Tubi.
Can't have an episode without mentioning Tubi at least once.
Yes. But please also plug yourself or where people can find you or support you or whatever else.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Jared Moshe, and I'm always up for talking about Westerns. Currently pitching another Western, though my reps don't like that.
No. Your boy. go ahead and send that breakdown my way. I'm attached. Just let him know.
If he's offer only.
It's all, yeah, exactly.
Not at all.
Pay or play.
I'm not that guy. Let me know what you need. Tape? What? In person? Please.
You can also often find me roaming the Autry Museum.
Ooh. Oh, funny enough, grew up out here, known of the Autry Museum for a while. But like, I don't know if y'all have experienced this, but like, growing up somewhere versus being an adult there, like the way your brain has mapped it just totally throws it for a loop. And so like growing up, the LA Zoo has always seemed so far away, but it's like right there. It's like right next to me now. And I remember like my friend told me like real long time ago was like, you gotta go to the Autry Museum. It's really cool. It's all the cowboy stuff. It's right across the street from the LA Zoo. So I always have known that. And then like I recently passed it, like literally this week, and I was like, oh yeah, I can go to that now because it's like right there. I never think. You know, I'll bring Naomi. I was like, here, you're gonna learn about cowboys, but this is really for daddy. You gotta talk in this voice. Oh wow. Well, for you listening right now, if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, you can tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. And this has been a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.